Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ambassador John Campbell, who is the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He is a former career Foreign Service officer and a former ambassador to Nigeria, a political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. And his book, Nigeria, Dancing on the Brink, was published by Rowan and Littlefield, and the second edition is coming out soon. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ambassador John Campbell.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
And the French appear to be, at least in terms of French public opinion, it's quite popular, their intervention in Mali. But let's go back a little bit. Is this rather, you know, at the risk of invoking the domino theory, it seems to me that much of what's happening in the Sahel and in north of Africa are the dominoes from the collapse and removal of Gaddafi and all of the arms that trickle down south. So is this a factor in this, or are there other long-standing issues that have been inflamed by what happened in Libya?
There are other much deeper issues that are involved. The fundamental issue is the alienation of northern Mali from the regime in Bamako. This is long-standing. There have been some 20 years of promises made by the Bamako government for greater autonomy in the north and for a fairer distribution of resources. There has been, again, for a fairly long time, a low-level insurgency in the north. Now, what Libyan arms did was it, as it were, allowed that insurgency to flare up. One of the very awkward things that I don't think we have a really good grasp of is just what the degree of public support the Islamists in the north have. You see press reports of people fleeing across the border. The question is, are they fleeing from AQIM, or are they crossing the border because there's a shortage of food? Part of the essential background to what we're talking about is an almost continuous food emergency in that region, with repeated UN appeals to the international community. So when you're talking about population movements, we have to be very careful about causation. That said, there is no question that the AQIM-linked regime in the north has been a humanitarian disaster.
And AQIM, of course, is Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb. Now, how much is this a real franchise? Because, as you know, Ambassador Campbell, everybody claims to be Al-Qaeda, and it's difficult to know whether it's become this kind of McDonald's of terrorism. So tell me about that.
I couldn't agree with you more. Just what does it mean to talk about being a franchise of an organization based in Algeria, which appears to be on the run and which has fragmented? Further, the various Islamist groups in northern Mali went after an Al-Qaeda franchise, not the other way around. So the real question is, how meaningful is it even to talk about Al-Qaeda linked? I always get very nervous when I see that phrase. For one thing, it implies that somehow or another, what's going on in northern Nigeria poses a terrorist threat, which eventually could even affect the United States. Don't think so.
So at this point, Ambassador Campbell, what we're looking at are kind of Mad Max pictures of these desert convoys of SUVs with machine guns mounted on them. And
that's right.
And if the French have Mirage jets and their Air Force in there, it would seem to me that this would be a pretty one-sided fight.
Well, I think it will be, at least in conventional terms. And it's why I would expect the early liberation of Timbuktu, Gao, and one or two other cities. I would also suggest that fundamentally that's largely irrelevant. The Islamic militants will simply fall back into the desert, which is where they have been before. And the Polisario have shown us that you can carry on an insurgency based in a desert for a very long time.
And this is the guerrilla group that's been at a long guerrilla war against the Moroccan government.
That's right.
For, what, decades now, right?
Decades now, and they're still there.
Right. Again,
and of course, Morocco is a lot stronger a state than any of the others that we're talking about here.
And what's their ideological underpinning?
Which one?
Polisario. And I'm trying to get a sense of how much this is ideology and how much this is gangsterism, opportunism, whatever.
Right.
You know.
What Polisario wants is that they want an independent state of Western Sahara. At least in theory, what the groups in northern Mali want is the establishment of an Islamic state conducted according to a very, very rigid interpretation of Sharia law.
So what attends that, of course, are human rights abuses, and there's a possibility of, isn't there a French soldier that's been captured or killed?
Well, there's been at least one French soldier killed.
Right. But how much of these roaming bands of so-called Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, you know, established any kind of government in order to know exactly what their agenda would be?
They have established in certain places a regime of negatives. I'm thinking of things like the destruction of the tombs of saints in Timbuktu, which were a World Heritage Site. The dramatic use of Sharia punishments, I think at least in part, to terrorize the local population. But I don't think we can talk about a kind of coalition in any sort of meaningful sense. It's rather a bunch of warlords who talk about, yes, Sharia, but also keeping the smuggling lines open and the revenue flowing in.
Again, I'm speaking with Ambassador John Campbell, who is the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He is a former career Foreign Service officer and a former ambassador to Nigeria and political counselor to the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. His book, Nigeria Dancing on the Brink, was published in 2010, and its second edition is coming out soon. And we're talking about Mali and the extent to which the French have intervened to prop up a extremely, it would seem, corrupt and incompetent regime there, particularly militarily speaking, Ryan.
Well, it would indeed seem that way. I mean, that, it seems to me, is a fundamental part of the problem. If there was a credible and responsible government in Bamako, and there's not, and no immediate prospect of one, but if there was one, I think the internal fissures within the militants in the north would widen.
So the U.S. doesn't have any fingerprints on this, right?
No.
Presumably that would not help if already the Al-Qaeda and the Maghreb are talking about the Crusaders invading and this being a war on behalf of Islam against the Crusaders. I imagine the French are not much looked upon much more favorably than the U.S., but what's your sense then of where the U.S. is in the sense it's not having any direct fingerprints, but what is U.S. policy and what do you understand is being advocated behind the scenes?
Well, this is going to be a dilemma. What the U.S. Has advocated is that Mali be approached as a regional issue, making use of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. And ECOWAS has been in the process of putting together an armed force, which would require subsequent training, that could be deployed in northern Mali. Now, putting together that kind of force is not easy. Poor West African states don't have a whole lot of spare troops. Nigeria, for example, a few days ago, announced that instead of providing 600 troops, it could only provide 450, and that it could not meet the bills for the ECOWAS expedition, which it has done in previous cases. Nigeria is badly stretched by Boko Haram in the north. To a greater or lesser extent, most of these states have internal issues. So you don't just simply wave a magic wand and put together an ECOWAS force, train it, and send it off in a month's time. And in fact, it's the length of time required that may have been part of the French motivation to move.
So where does this U.S. Trans-Sahara Counterterrorism Partnership, the TSCPT, where does it stand? Because hasn't the U.S. been involved in trying to organize some kind of force in this part of the world and doesn't look like it's working out too well?
I would say it's been a disaster. The centerpiece for the initiative was U.S. in-depth training of indigenous African forces. And that has proceeded in some places. Unfortunately, in Mali, some of those so trained bolted for the insurgents. In Bamako, the person that mounted the coup against the civilian government, Sanubu, had been trained by the U.S. forces. So I would have thought that this would cause considerable thought on the part of the architects of that initiative.
So, and these were, the U.S. trained some Tuaregs, right, who they thought they'd turned.
That's exactly what it was.
And in fact, they turned against the U.S.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And so we're left with what, the French bailing out the remnants of this corrupt government.
That's right.
And the U.S. is sort of on the sidelines, what, hoping for the best?
Well, I would suspect, don't know this, because in fact, I am retired from the State Department. I retired from the State Department when I came to the Council. So I'm not privy to the inner workings of U.S. policy on this. But I would suspect that what the U.S. is doing is diplomatically trying to reach some kind of accommodation among the various elements in Bamako to produce a credible government. There's a real problem here, though. And that problem is that there are indeed draconian restrictions applied by Congress in a situation where a coup overthrows a legitimately elected government. Well, that's what happened here. Now, that government may have been wildly unpopular at the time it was overthrown, but still it was a legitimately elected government.
So if Congress is hamstrung by that stricture, what about the administration itself? I mean,
well, the administration particularly is hamstrung by it because it's the law of the land.
Right, but in terms of their point people, who, I mean, we've seen a bruising situation with Susan Rice is now because of the United Nations, but she was the Africa expert. Who is, in whose lap has this landed?
Well, according to an organizational chart, it would be Johnny Carson, who is the Assistant Secretary for African Affairs.
And what's your understanding of, my understanding is that as soon as you start talking about Al-Qaeda, you get a lot of attention in Washington, D.C.
Well, you do, and you particularly get it from the Department of Defense.
So and what's also, happening with DOD? Are they chafing at the bit to get in here, or are they just letting the French take the lead?
It's more, No, it's more complicated than that. Whenever you talk about Al-Qaeda linked, red flags go up all over the place. In my view, particularly in parts of the Department of Defense, particularly among certain conservative members of Congress.
And how much influence do they have in with the rest of the government there in Washington? And I mean, is it?
Well, we saw what happened to Susan Rice, didn't we?
I see. So then, I mean, it's almost like the ghost of Jesse Helms is coming back. Tell me, though, is it? What are the indications then that the conservatives are beating the drum for the U.S. to get involved? I mean,
that I have not seen yet.
Right.
And I tend to doubt that that's going to happen in any overt sense. I cannot imagine any American political support for getting involved in Mali. I mean, most people don't have the vaguest notion where it is. And in the aftermath of Iraq and Afghanistan, the last thing most Americans want is sending off American troops to someplace they never heard of before. Now, they're perfectly happy to do it if it's for purposes of humanitarian relief. But that's not exactly what we're talking about here.
So your sense then is that even though there may be some conservative voices in the U.S. military may be concerned about Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, on the other side, on the administration side, they're a little gun-shy, are they? That was the suggestion, I take it, from what happened to Susan Rice, that you know, we don't need any boots on the ground. And even though we had, you know, the Libyan war, if you can call it that, was an exemplar of not having boots on the ground, it nevertheless came back to haunt the administration.
It did indeed. To say gun-shy is too strong. It's too strong because I think everybody recognizes that there would be no political constituency for American intervention in Mali. Now, I suppose that could change. That could change if there were a whole series of highly publicized, ghastly human rights abuses, you know, splashed all over television. But right now, I don't see any sign of that.
Well, that may have a lot to do with the fact that what a harsh and inaccessible place it is. And if the press were brave enough or foolish enough to get in there, they may be held hostage like the French.
Indeed. That is a very realistic concern.
So just in closing then, Ambassador John Campbell, what's your sense of where this is heading then? I take it you feel that militarily it'll change fairly quickly in the favor of the French, but that won't be the end of it.
That's right. That what will happen militarily and in a fairly short term is that the historic cities of Mali, like Timbuktu or Gao, they will be retaken. But I would anticipate that Ansar Dine and the other radical Islamists will melt into the desert and will, at very best, continue a kind of low-level insurgency for a very long time. Now, if you are looking for some kind of real solution to the problem, that requires the establishment of a credible government in Bamako, which makes promises to the North, which it then proceeds to keep. That hasn't happened yet.
Well, Ambassador John Campbell, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ambassador John Campbell, who is the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He is a former career Foreign Service officer and a former ambassador to Nigeria and political counselor to the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. His book, Nigeria Dancing on the Brink, was published in 2010, and the second edition is coming out soon. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the wages for working Americans are going down while profits are going up.